I'm definitely not the victim, and I haven't tried to play the victim in this role. I love all my kids, you know, with all my heart, and, you know, I'll run through a brick wall for them, you know, I'll jump in front of a car for them, you know. That's the type of love that I have for my kids.
I do believe part of that. I really do. I just think that maybe he's doing the right thing by getting counseling. That was the voice of Adrian Peterson speaking about what his kids mean to him, and that he's on his way back to recovery. And I think that there's been an issue there for a long time with him, a behavioral and anger type issue, where when it comes time to discipline, it got pretty it went a little over the top.
Well,
when you see the pictures, and again, we're said and done with that kind of stuff. But this guy definitely needed to see someone to try to manage what was going on there, because behaviorally speaking, he just did not know when to stop this discipline.
Well, and the lifestyle came home to roost.
Yeah,
the promiscuity, you know, all of that, which he did not like to have come out in the media, but it was going to.
Yeah.
When your credibility and your, you know, your aptitude as a parent gets put on the table when stuff like this comes out, and that's where it all poured out. You know, the one thing he said, too, about I absolutely was not playing the victim, well, that's a little bit cynical, because he was playing the victim. As recently as last Thursday, he was playing the victim. But I think it was important that he addressed the fact that in no way should I have been the victim. I mean, I did not portray myself that, but, you know, we all know that he did. But I think hitting that head on, took a little bit of the edge off today, and I think that was an important point to make as he goes forward and as the team goes forward with him back in the fold.
Yeah, and saying what he did about his kids, I feel that coming from him, but I just, there's another part that snaps in this guy, and I'm hoping he can address that. I hope they can help him. I hope he definitely can get a grip of what he is when he's in front of his kids. You know, when he's disciplining one of his kids or trying to teach them something, that he can, in fact, do that. And be the parent that he should be, instead of some of the over the top stuff. I know what switching was, and I know what, you know, getting the paddle was back in my day and time. But it wasn't that. You know, he didn't have to pull your drawers down and take it, you know, bare skin. You know, that was pretty extreme. So anyway, moving on, and moving on completely from this. How marketable is this now for him, now that he's back? How does this change things in one day? Brian Murphy, I ask you this because we were going to talk about this today. We even told you yesterday. It changed overnight, I think.
Well, let's back it up and get some context here. I mean, we got to remember what happened when this indictment came down on a Friday.
Correct.
Out of Texas, just before week two against New England.
Correct.
The Vikings immediately said Adrian is going to be deactivated, which is the only thing I think they could do.
Correct.
Monday morning, they come out and say, you know, this is a legal issue. We're going to let it play out. He's back on the roster. Boom. Bombs. Everything went off.
Everything.
It was the worst possible scenario. Out their chief sponsor. You have Budweiser calling up the NFL saying, we're not liking what's going on here. You have U.S. Bank saying, which is the open secret in town, is U.S. Bank is going to be the rights holders for the stadium. And they're going to pony up some serious cash to the Vikings and the Wilfs to put their name on that stadium. And they're like, yeah, we're going to monitor how the Vikings handle these things from here. I mean, they were in a crisis mode, and Rick Spielman performance, and he shouldn't have been out there, admittedly, answering these questions for the franchise, was a disaster. The one thing I wish Adrian would have been asked today by somebody is, you know, you were obviously, you know, Kevin Warren, I think, took control of that situation a couple days later, said we're going to put him on the exempt list while this plays out. He's still going to get paid, but this is best for Adrian, it's best for the franchise, and we're going to let the NFL and the courts take care of this. I mean, obviously that angered Peterson. He thought he was betrayed and turned upon. I mean, my whole thing would be, you know, Warren was doing what he's supposed to get paid for. He's working for the Wilfs. He's protecting the brand. What would you have had the Vikings do in that situation? The governor was calling for his head. It was embarrassing. It was just a PR disaster that week. So all of that being said, it was the worst possible situation for the Vikings. I think everything was kind of on ice from that point on, and even up until today. I think there's still going to be a feeling out process from the corporate community, certainly from the fan base may be eager to welcome him back because they're ready to see him play. Corporate community, social community, the philanthropic community, community. They're going to have to wait to see, you know, actions speak louder than words. Let's see. They're going to want to see how this plays out. I think this was the Vikings handled this very well today. Peterson handled it very well. I think going forward, he can be a part of your sales pitch for the 2015 season, but I think that's about it because we still don't know if he's even going to be back in 2016 when that new stadium opens. I think they're going to have to tread lightly. I think we've talked about how much this is going to be Teddy Bridgewater's team going forward as the face of the franchise as well. Peterson still has a place at the table in that conversation, but I think, you know, before Radisson comes rushing back, and maybe they will, but I think they're still going to want to see what the fan reaction is going to be in the public, and it's still going to be tidy, but it's a positive step. You don't the marketing department at least knows what they're working with now.
That's the bottom line.
So do you think it becomes more difficult then for the PR staff to plan for the unveiling of the new stadium with Peterson because they have to balance certain wills corporately? Or would it have been tough for them to reinvent the team's identity, you know, tear down the Peterson signs on the outside of the stadium and start branding a new guy in Teddy Bridgewater? Do you feel like there's going to be plenty of challenges here, not only this year, but next year if you're unveiling a new stadium and Peterson is embroiled in more contract disputes?
I do think it's going to be tricky, but I think if anything, this buys them time. It lifts the cloud, the veil of uncertainty. He's not going to be pissing on the franchise as he was last week again, all day, every day. So I think there, in a way, again, the healing will begin. But yeah, I think as they're putting their programs and their game programs, their media guides, their bus placards, their, you know, are they going to put him on there yet? Maybe not. Maybe they will, but I, at least they got some time now to figure this out. If this had dragged on all summer, it would have been really bad. And I don't know if you go beyond the season yet, because you're right, it could get ugly again. He may break down. He may get traded. I think it was, you know, it wasn't even a fait accompli that he was going to open that new stadium if this scandal hadn't broken anyway. I think it would have been interesting to see whether they would have asked him to take a pay cut or renegotiate it or outright traded and or cut him.
Right.
Just on the financial aspect.
I think there would have been that, too. I think that they have the ability now to move on. That's the bottom line. Now that he's back, they can move on with the possibility of having a very successful franchise. Not because it's the face of Adrian Peterson. It's because the Minnesota Vikings have a nice stacked offense now, and Teddy Bridgewater leads that. I did say that. Teddy Bridgewater leads it. But with Adrian back, they can talk a little differently. They can have a little different tone about their pitch when they go in to sell. And I think that because Adrian's back, you don't even have to use his name. But this team includes Adrian Peterson now. This is going to be a good team. They can say that, and I think they can be very adamant and very sincere about saying that without having to even blink. And I think people would have to say they did get that running back back. And this could be a good a successful team that we can put our money in, you know, we can involve ourselves in and to invest in.
It allows the team to take a step back after today. And gauge the public reaction, gave the corporate reaction in the coming days and weeks, because with the uncertainty, there wasn't an ability to do that. They didn't know if he was coming back. They didn't know in what condition, in what attitude he was going to be coming back in. I think, Sam, you brought this a good point. Tomorrow, their annual playground build, which is always a great photo op these guys, you know, coming off a bus and wheeling dirt around and putting up swing sets and slides. I think Peterson, it would behoove him and the team to get him out there and get him in those shots with kids watching him doing that. He's not going to have to face questions. He dealt with that today. Mm-hmm. But pictures of Adrian Peterson moving dirt and making kids smile, look, cynics are going to look at it as, well, it is a PR move. That's exactly what it is. And I think that the reaction to that, there's going to be cynics out there that are going to just roll their eyes at it, but there's going to be a lot of the ice is going to be melting, and I think you're going to see corporate partnerships really start to come together and figure out, okay, this is it's certainly an organization we're not going to abandon them, but seeing how they handle Adrian going forward after the disaster in September, I think it's going to bode well for their ability to sell this team.
And the only part to me that's maybe a little bit unsettling is that there's still that year away contract renegotiation that may have to occur a year from now. I hope that Chad Greenway gets a hold of Adrian Peterson's ear, because Greenway exhibited one of the cleanest contract renegotiations I've ever seen. It was quiet. He was positive throughout the whole thing. He saw the writing on the wall, and he took a pay cut. And
for the second year in a row.
Right. And while Peterson's a more higher profile player than Chad Greenway is, you hope that he can understand where the Vikings are coming from, that he's an important cog in this team, that Minnesota can still pay him more than anyone else can. And hopefully he's not a lame duck running back and people have to talk all next offseason about whether he's going to be back in 2016 for the opening of the new stadium.
You just hit it right on the head. If he comes back, and he's done a great job to start that off with a great attitude. Not a good attitude. He was fair about what he said today to himself and to the public and to the team. He said what he should have said, so I'll say his best attitude was put forward. With that being said, we can move on into another season where if he runs the ball the way he's capable of, he doesn't get injured, he puts up some good numbers again, the team has relative success or really great success, who knows? I think that they have a chance, he has a chance then, with that window of 1 year, to have a whole different conversation, a completely different conversation about that 2016 and 17 contract.
Yeah.
I think he has but he has 1 year to do it. He started that off today with the right step, and I think he might have done himself a big favor by doing that. Let's take a break. Jim Rich is up next from Fox 9, one of our favorite guys. Don't know if he's on the air or not. We just don't know. But when we get him, it's a lot of fun. So Jim Rich is up next right here at Radioactive Sports. Come back.
Feel that? Radioactive Sports. 105 The Ticket.
I feel good. You know, there's young guys, I'm not going to say any names, but there's young guys I work out with in Houston, younger guys, like, you know, 24, 25, and first-year guys that's going to play. And, you know, I'll run them and, you know, I'll jump them and everything else. So with that being said, age is just a number.
That's a good point. How old would you be if you didn't know how old you was? I think Satchel Paige said that. And Adrian Peterson kind of said it just now. Really, he's going to be, what, 31 at the beginning of the season?
No, he's 30. He turned 30 in March.
He turned 30 in March.
Are you among those that could make the argument he's 30 going on 29 because he did not have the wear and tear last year?
I absolutely would make that point. But something funny happens to a football player when they sit out of their pads for a year and change.
And the 30.
The
stats prove that out.
30 as well, and especially at running back. And he has had his issues. He runs hard. He doesn't run around people. He doesn't really run out of bounds. He challenges people, and, I mean, he takes the punishment to them. Do we have Mr. Rich available right now? I think we're getting a yes. Jim, are you there?
Yes, of course. Yes, I'm here for you.
Hey, listen, what is your take on all of this? I mean, we've got 28 back in the backfield now. Do you think that this team is more marketable today, or will they take a setback in any way, shape, or form because he's now a member of this team again? Let's just ask a very bold question. We'll start with that one.
I don't think so. I think if he continues to handle himself the way he did today, which was pretty impressive for Adrian to be put up there under that kind of scrutiny. You know, yes, the questions were, you know, Diane Sawyer 2020, you know, or 60 Minutes grilling. But there were some questions there, and I think he did a good job. And I think now if he continues just to talk football and this off-the-field issue goes away, I don't think there's going to be lasting repercussions. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there'll be groups protesting. Maybe there'll be sponsors that stay away from the team that have brought him back. But in today's society, when you say you're sorry and you are genuine about it, people are more than willing to give you a second chance. And if he comes out and does everything that the Vikings ask him to do as far as making appearances and in that first game. He goes over 100 yards and scores a touchdown. I think a lot of people will be able to put this behind him. And the courts appear to be happy with what he's done. He said he's satisfied a lot of the legal ramifications of the incident and the story he told about his son. If that's genuine, then I think a lot of people will be able to move on from this.
Jim, were you in attendance today down at Winter Park? Did you take that in yourself?
I was not. I'm on the Gopher Road Trip, Chalk Talk 2015.
Wow.
I'm outside of Rochester, Minnesota, in Byron, Minnesota, at the Sonnabee Country Club, where Coach Kill and 11 other coaches are addressing Gopher fans, talking about the off season.
What did you shoot today?
I didn't even get to touch a club. They know better than this place is way too nice to give me a golf club.
They don't want hacks out there.
Right.
You don't replace your divot.
Bill Murray type holes in their fairway.
I know better than that. I used to come out and golf in mine, my golf tournament every year, and you play both the morning and the afternoon shotgun, and I was told you were a pretty good golfer.
Well, you hit my keys, so I couldn't leave, so I figured I'd pay the second 18.
You know, it's a beautiful thing when a great plan like that comes together, but I knew if I stole your keys, that would be the case, and I could get you out there again, and I needed you, so I made you.
Yes, you did.
So this whole thing, it comes together at just the right time. Do you think, I mean, the simple fact that he came in himself and volunteered to come back to this during OTAs and not the mandatory minicamp, I mean, that did him a lot of good just in that alone, didn't it?
I think so. And the one question that I would have asked had I been there is, where are you at with your contract? What kind of conversation, if any, has been had between your agent and Rick Spielman? Where is all that? Because there may have been some back channel conversations that have taken place where, okay, you show up, do this, do that, we get a look at you, then we'll open up the checkbook and start discussing an extension or rewriting what's left in your contract. That's the one thing I think here that could be a fly in the ointment. If, you know, we're all happy today, but if the Vikings said they would renegotiate and it doesn't go well, does this all turn south?
Well, I think the timing of this, as you mentioned, you know, it puts the power in Peterson's hands. He goes out, he performs, he earns the last bit of, he earns the full 12.75 above, way above market value contract that he probably wouldn't have earned had this scandal not erupted. And he can go either earn more guaranteed money or prove the fact that he's worth some more. I think I think there is something implicit there that says, look, you know, it's, you just need to settle down, put the smartphone down, wave the white flag of surrender, realize you're not going to defeat us in this, come play for us, earn that money, and it'll all work out in the end. And I think that he realized that at the end, and I think there probably is some kind of an implicit, and Zimmer may play a role in that next year as well, in the negotiating, bargaining sessions, like, hey, look, this guy stuck to his word, we need to reward him.
And I'm in agreement with that. I think, and you and I had the conversation earlier this morning when we found out he was coming back, Brian. And I wondered, you know, this was being held up because of money. This was being held up because of contract.
Imagine that.
He said something on Twitter. I mean, we know what it was about. Now all of a sudden he's going to volunteer to be here. That conversation with Mike Zimmer was, Adrian, get here. Good things happen to players who show up and put their best foot forward. The best way to reach management and to reach them in a way that you want to talk money is to show up and put your best foot forward and show them that you're still the player you always were. And I think that there might be, like you said, Jim, there might be something underlying him being here like this all of a sudden and just fessing up to it and moving on. I think there could be something done moving forward.
Well, and you know what? It would be interesting to see how this would have played out under either Coach Frazier or Coach Childress. If this same kind of scenario where it seems like Peterson really does trust Zimmer, that he seems like he's a quote-unquote player's coach. That's what they said about Coach Frazier, too. But then towards the end, there were people saying, well, he doesn't really have all of our backs. It seems like he's playing favorites with some people and not with the entire team. So I think Coach Zimmer, you know, has a way to reach players, and this is in the infancy of his coaching career. He just has 1 year, but I think a lot of these guys really believe in what he does and what he says, and that it's all about football, and that's what I'm here for. And, you know, I think he played a big role in this, bigger than maybe a lot of people assumed from the beginning.
Jim Rich of Fox 9. Jim, I'd say a lot of people stand to gain from Peterson coming back. You've got Norv Turner, who now has another weapon, Teddy Bridgewater, less pressure on him. The offensive line gets to look better, maybe more room for Cordero Patterson. Who do you feel like can gain the most from Peterson being on the field now?
I think Bridgewater. I think it really will help him. I mean, he was the focus of the offense. And, you know, even if they do become a more passing team, as they did last season, to move the ball, and even if that continues under Norv Turner, I still think having that in the backfield. And Adrian was good at it with Favre when he wasn't the focal point of the offense, if this is the way Turner wants to take it. You know, when Favre stole the limelight and he was the face of the franchise for especially the 09 season, Adrian did a nice job there of not saying, hey, I'm not getting my looks, I'm not getting my carries. You know, he was all about winning. And, you know, I think this will benefit Bridgewater the most when we get this role. And I'm sure the wide receivers would be second best and the offensive line third, but I really think that it could be a situation where Bridgewater really has things open up for him, and he'll have better looks when he looks downfield as opposed to seeing his favorite targets double covered.
I think so too, and I also believe that Norv Turner has a good sort of cookie cutter template in place from Dallas days with Emmitt Smith and some good receivers and a pretty good quarterback named Aikman. And I think that if anyone can do it and mix and match and get everyone their yards and their catches and their throws and touchdowns, Norv Turner knows how to mix that up a little bit and knows how to play that card. Jim Rich, we thank you for your time, though. And, you know, tomorrow, you never know what could happen. This could go in another completely different direction, right?
Right. We could have a riot at the playground.
We could. I mean, you never know. I mean, you could take a shovel to someone, the back of someone's head.
Groups out there protesting.
Is Lil Wayne coming tomorrow? Is that what?
Yeah, Lil Wayne's supposed to be there to help open the playground. He's going to bring like a machete. Good Lord. I don't know if you heard about that. I'll explain that one later.
Sorry,
to you,
Jim.
But trust me, there's a story in there from yesterday's radio show.
I see.
Yeah, well.
It sounds funny, so I just went with it.
That's what you do. You blend in. That's a nice thing for you to do. Thank you. We're going to, you want to wish us well? We're going to invite Mike Berardino into the conversation next.
Good luck with that.
Thank you, because we're going to need it, I think. Thank you, Jim. We're going to do just that. It's Hardball with Mike Berardino next. He's out in Boston. Yesterday he was doing nothing but sitting in his room at the Hampton, somewhere outside of Boston. Didn't even stay in Boston. What's wrong with him? Have a clam chowder in Boston somewhere. Pour yourself a brew. Sit around and take it all in. My God, a rainy day in Boston's a great day. And not for Mike Berardino, because not very many days are good days for Mike. And he'll make that blatantly obvious when we have him on next.
I don't want to be the bad guy. I don't want to do your sleep.
Huge lead at first. Trail runner. Drive to left field and hit Davis. Colabello back. Off the warning track. Here comes Hicks. Here comes Dozier. Hunter has put the Twins in front.
That's what Torrey with two eyes does. He puts people out in front. He's a player. He's a player's player. And we're just hoping that maybe some of this dropkick Murphy emotion and some of that will inspire Mike Berardino to get up and get out of the Hampton and get downtown Boston for a brew. And we're just hoping that you can just listen to this and know that you just did completely opposite that yesterday and were just a fuddy-dud guy in a Hampton in the middle of, like, somewhere Massachusetts.
Well, I did have a lobster roll yesterday. Well, I will say, after we spoke, you know, I felt like I was dragging everybody down. So I made sure to have a lobster roll and some chowder, and I had a good portion of that, and I felt better.
And we're gonna
play here. Right? It looks like we're gonna play. Don't even have the tarp on the field, so even though I've not seen the sun, I'm not sure they have sun here in Boston. they will play, or at least attempt to play tonight.
Mike, it's Brian again, filling in here for Ben. So I thought
he's excited.
I am.
Wow, Mike was excited to hear that you're still here.
I know.
You can tell, right?
It's a fellow buddy in the foxhole. Some news today with Ricky Nolasco. He had his ankle checked out. What do we know?
What we know is that he will throw a bullpen on Thursday. He will not be making his normal turn on Friday in the interleague opener there against Milwaukee. He was guardedly optimistic, I guess, because the MRI showed no structural damage on his right ankle, but he did pitch in pain for about 17 pitches to some extent after he tweaked it in the first inning, he said. This goes back to a high school injury when he was playing in California, a sprained ankle there that, and I don't know if that guy can make any more noise, but he just did. Basically it's something that never really bothered him until the other day, and he threw one pitch to Edwin Encarnacion and bam, it was an issue again, but right now it's just inflammation.
A lot of intrigue now with the doubleheader tomorrow, some rotation shuffling. It looks like Michael Tonkin, who was just dispatched to Rochester, is back up. What's the pitching depth look like and the rotation look like in the next couple days?
Well, all we can definitely say is, like you said, Phil Hughes will start the day game tomorrow, and then Trevor May will take his normal turn in the night game. And Thursday's TBD. It could be Tommy Malone, because he would then have enough rest to start that game, but that would require a roster move. It could be Kyle Gibson on his normal turn. Mulder was not ready to commit to that yet, because he still wants to know how Nolasco will be, and as we talked on the show yesterday, you're really not going to have a definitive answer on Nolasco going forward till Thursday when he tries to climb on a bullpen mound here at Fenway. So you got me on Thursday at this point. There are options. J.R. Graham, I asked about him. It would take until Friday before they could run him out there as a starter, but they're not afraid to do that. Tim Stauffer, less likely to get a chance to start one of those games, but Graham would probably be the choice on Friday if it came to that. Tonkin's just here for the day tomorrow. He's actually on his way. Now, that's not official, because if fans are wondering what would they do if a position player got hurt tonight or was unavailable in any way, they have not made that, they've not written that in ink. Tonkin is flying here or traveling here, but they would not activate him until just before the doubleheader on Wednesday, and then he would be available for both games. That would give them a whopping 14 pitchers and 12 position players still. So that's that was a little surprising, but that's how they're doing it.
This is Mike Berardino, brought to you by Nature's Fury. Mike Pelfrey goes tonight. He's 4-1, 2.77 ERA, and he's the guy who got the spot in the rotation when Irvin Santana got suspended. He's doing so well now, and I know this is looking ahead about 5 weeks into July, but do you feel like Pelfrey has now solidified it himself to a point where when Santana does come back, Pelfrey won't be the one kicked out?
I don't think we can make any pronouncements like that, Sam. I think that would be foolhardy on my part, and I don't think you'd get anybody with the Twins giving just about anybody their spot. I mean, just look at Nolasco, just won 5 in a row, and it looked like that was the peak of his Twins tenure, and then rolls the ankle on one pitch, and now you don't even know if he can start, next, or if he'll end up on the DL. you can't look that far ahead, but you know, those would be nice problems to have. I wouldn't begin to speculate
why are you
who would be knocked out of that when Santana comes back. You're also assuming that Santana will have a hiccup-free run-up. He has to complete not only these extended spring games down in Fort Myers, which are real easy, but he has to go on and face minor league hitters, and at any point, he's never had an absence this long. And Terry Ryan made a good point the other day on Sunday talking about the mental hurdle that Santana will be facing when he comes back. You know, he's got to feel weird, and there's some shame involved. No doubt about it. He's got to face his teammates, and, you know, he's never had to pitch with the sense that he had let everyone down. What's different about this is that the team's done so well, surprisingly well, without him, that he's a bonus. But, you know, within his own heart, he's going to have to rectify that and stand on the mound and try to get people out and believe in himself. And only he knows if he believes in himself.
Why are you so difficult? You, Mike, why are you so difficult?
Yeah.
Why are you so hard on people here?
I even got the lobster roll. What do you want?
What is a lobster roll anyway? I played in New England
in
1989. No, I don't think I've ever had a lobster roll.
They didn't feed you?
Although they fed me, all right.
He went to Spaghetti Eddie's.
I went to Spaghetti Eddie's in Foxborough, Massachusetts. Oh, my God, they fed me.
I'm shocked by this. You've never had a lobster roll?
I don't think I have.
It's a piece of bread with a bunch of lobster shoved in it, and they give you some butter, and it's great.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm proud of you, at least for getting that done. There is a
doubleheader tomorrow. I mean, that's about as good as I'm going to be able to do here in terms of the culinary exploits. That's about all I got. I mean, you know, I was on the Orange Line today for a good hour. It's just a delight being out there in Woburn.
Fairfield Inn, on the Orange Line, Fairfield Inn.
Jeez. Yeah, out there it's pretty close to Peabody, as they say it here. I know how to say Peabody, but I've stayed in Peabody, but not this time. And the lobster roll was good, and let's just see if we can get four games in 3 days played.
Mike, real quick, I saw your Twitter feed. It sounds like Molly was going down memory lane a little bit about his first visit to Fenway and his, or at least viewing, if not encountering, the man who shares his birthday, Yaz.
Yes, young Molly in 1975. Yeah, Intercontinental Cup, as he recalled. They played an exhibition here against the Cape Cod League team, and he enjoyed remembering that. I asked him if he had gone up to Yaz, tried to pick his brain at all. He said no, he was too awestruck. He just watched. Yaz is on the DL, I guess, and was back here in 75, and obviously 75, pretty important year in Red Sox history. That's a pretty neat memory, and I just think it's cool that Mahler, like I did. I told him, you know, I remember having the same birthday as Trevor Hoffman and Bob Bailey. He had Yaz, so he wins. Corey Provost said he had the same birth date as Satchel Paige. So again, I've been knocked down another peg. But it's just cool to picture a young Mahler, you know, flipping through Street and Smith's and his baseball card collection to see who else had August 22nd. And he had Yaz, and I'm imagining he ran through the house pretty pleased with that.
I'm sure he did. And then he probably put it in his bicycle tire spokes and flipped it all the way down the street. You know, I used to put them on your tires, the really great cards.
Yeah.
And just get a clothesline pin and just put those on your bike and ruin the Carl Yastrzemski card.
The rookie cards that became worth hundreds of dollars.
Exactly.
But they sounded great on the sidewalk.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, Mike, you're the best in the business. I wish I had a baseball card of you, Mike.
I never did that. That's not true, but I never did that. I would put them in shoe boxes. I would treat them with the respect they deserve.
Well,
there's
that. I would. And I'm guessing you didn't trade them either, or you just traded the gum.
The gum was horrible. I got rid of that quickly. I don't know why anyone would ever like gum.
Smell never left, though.
I will say that there was one year, maybe 77, where they had a thing where on the back, you know, it would say single, double, whatever, you know, fly to center, and you could play games with the cards. I did do that and may have damaged some of them in that era, but no bicycle spokes. I don't know. I can't relate to that. God bless it. I think our generation and this generation and beyond doesn't care about baseball cards, it makes me sad.
Yeah, and I'm guessing then that you still have a pristine collection of baseball cards in boxes somewhere.
Mm-hmm, yes. Yes, I do. Wow. I wish my son had more interest in it, but he really doesn't. I think I'm just going to sell them on eBay.
Jeez. Wow, that's respect
we'll
right there.
We'll just have a special show sometime, and we'll just put them all up for bid, and I'll start with the Reggie Jackson rookie card.
Wow.
I really don't even want to have that anymore.
Oh, probably not. Just get rid of it, huh?
Like the cash.
God. Well, you know what? You're a man of high standards. You don't like the bubble gum, but you like lobster rolls, and we know what kind of guy you are. So it's
this is like therapy, and thanks for having me.
Well, I feel like you could use an awful lot more. So jump on the couch anytime you want to with me. It's a concrete sofa, by the way, for you. Yeah. Mike Berardino, thank you for your time. Have a good time there out there in Beantown, and go Twins. Let's see if they can get them done.
All right. Talk to you tomorrow, fellas. Thanks.
You betcha. Mike Berardino, the one and the only Mike Berardino.
Hardball.
He is funny. What a grump. What did you say? What was your question that he just had to cut you off at the pass?
Yeah, I asked if Pelfrey had solidified his spot in the rotation, but it would have been foolhardy.
No.
Of course it would have been.
How could you even possibly think that?
What are you saying? Why would you even?
Child.
My God, Mike. Loosen up. It's 2015.
He's got a lot of baseball to cover in the next 3 days.
He does. So. He's just grumpy over
there. Got to come on with you tomorrow in between.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to make him pay the price again.
And I'm not going to be here to soften him up either.
Well,
his eyes are not going to light up when he knows I'm here.
Oh, God. He's a beaut. We've got
best in the business. He's a grinder.
He is a grinder. I'll hand that to him. With Adrian Peterson being back in the mix, he said he's back for OTAs, so he's back. He's with the team. What sort of destiny lays before Matt Asiata?
Who?
That huge guy that does nothing but score touchdowns down on the goal line, Matt Asiata. What's up next for Matt Asiata is the subject. Give us a call, 651-989-9105, if you'd like to throw in 2 cents or so and break down the Matt Asiata thought process. Where does he go from here? What is his role now that Adrian Peterson is back? Come on back.
How important is it to return to this team after nearly 9 months away during OTAs instead of training camp?
Well, it's big for the organization. I mean, it's important to have Adrian Peterson in that locker room getting, reintroduced to all the players. I mean, he's been gone for so long that this is a big moment for the Minnesota Vikings. And again, I think I felt like last week when he went on his ranting and raving, that was him coming to grips and saying, I'll be at camp next week. And that's why there was a lot of confidence. And again, that's a big paycheck. As you know, Mark, that's a big paycheck.
Over $12 million.
That you have a hard time walking away from. So this is really big for, obviously, the Minnesota Vikings for many reasons.
Many, many reasons. He's one of the best running backs ever to put on the pads in the National Football League. No question. He's definitely on pace, or he was on pace before last season, to run down Emmett, I suppose. It takes a long time and a lot of games. Emmett, there's one thing you can say about Emmett Smith. Very durable. Extremely tough. He was a good running back, but he didn't have what Adrian's got. I don't even really know what that is. There's an it factor with Adrian that sort of outweighs, I think, what Emmett Smith was doing. But Adrian's done this first 10,000 pretty quickly. And I think that if he gets back to his old self and his old that thought process that goes into prepping for a game, he's been out of that process for a while. Just that the habitual way of getting down to practice every day and getting into the meeting rooms and getting a hot tub, getting in a cold tub, taking care of yourself, just being a pro again. And learning how to take care of your body and getting back into your routine. That's what he's been away from for a long time. If he can do that, I think he's still got a lot of football left. But we do have phone calls. I think we have a phone call right now. Andy from Andover, in fact, called in. What do you think about all this, Andy?
It's bittersweet, I guess. You're glad to see the guy back on your team. What kind of running back you're getting. Of course he's older, but I, I think from a Viking standpoint, you know, they're not even just looking at a $12 million running back. They're at a $20 million running back for the $8 million they had to pay him last year. So I think you just have to keep running him and running him and running him and get whatever you can out of this guy for the next, you know, hopefully 2 to 3 years. You know, we've seen it in past, how this guy's run, and when he's challenged, what he comes up with against that challenge. You sure hope you got a guy that's going to, you know, break the single season rushing record this year. Asiata, we're probably going to have to hang on to him because there is question marks with not knowing how healthy, of course, Peterson's going to be throughout the year because he is on the other side of 30. But, you know, it's bittersweet. I'm happy to see the guy back. You just hope he shuts his mouth, does his job. And, you know, if the Vikings feel it's they're up to them to reward him, then so be it.
I think it's well put. I think you said that right. I think that if he runs the ball hard, does what he's supposed to do, keeps himself very low profile, and just everything happens on the field again the way it used to, I think they would be willing, if he put up good numbers again, to talk about 2016 and going into that new stadium and sort of taking good care of him. I really do. But I think he's taken a big step, I think, already, Andy, and the simple fact that he came back for an OTA instead of a mandatory minicamp is, I think, a big statement. But thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Your thoughts?
Matt Asiata. It's intriguing. Here's a guy that, you know, was buried in the shadows of Adrian Peterson, buried behind fullback Jerome Felton for a while, too. Got an opportunity last year, you know, is the typical, if you need 3 yards, he'll give you three. If you need 6 yards, he'll give you three and a half. But he got the tough yards inside the 5 yard line, found a way to make some plays in the passing game as well. I don't think this dooms Matt Asiata. I think, especially with Felton now gone, although they don't use a traditional fullback as much as they did under the old Muskie scheme, Norv doesn't usually use one as much, but I think there's value with having Matt Asiata. I don't think this spells the end of him. And with Jerick McKinnon's durability still a question mark, too. You're still going to need a little more strength maybe to spell Adrian for a third down and one, more so than Jerick McKinnon, I would think.
Peterson is such a good goal line back, though, in his own right. Asiata cashed in how many times from the one-yard line? Several games where he had a trifecta of touchdowns, and they all came in those first and goal, second and goal, right up against the goal line situations. And when you have Peterson, who's about as powerful a back as you can get, I do wonder if it reduces the role for Asiata. And if you keep him, you're probably keeping him as McKinnon insurance, if anything, because McKinnon hurt his back lifting weights. He's a small, diminutive person who, taking hits in the NFL, could take its toll on him. He's never played the running back position for a full season. So Asiata certainly is a viable option if Peterson were to go down, if McKinnon were to go down, and he'll probably stick around just for that reason. And then I guess Banyard might be the weight that they have to cut off.
And that would be a shame, too. I like Banyard, too. I'm going to say this about Matt Asiata. I'm going to say some crazy stuff here. Matt Asiata has a what we call in the business a nose for the goal line. I mean, he's more than just from a yard out, a dive, you know, 1 yard guy. He smells it from about 10 yards in, and the guy is virtually unstoppable. I think that he is, there's a lot of value to, I think he's a better pass catching receiving back than Adrian Peterson.
A lot of them are.
Yeah, and I'll say this too. I think he's a better pass blocker than Adrian Peterson. There's no one like Adrian Peterson in the league when it comes to running the damn rock. That's all there is to it. But the other things that Matt does bring to the table, Asiata does bring a nose for the damn goal line like no other. And there are some guys that are just like that. They smell it. They're going to get in. They're determined. Peterson, again, as you said, another one of those guys, just a workhorse and someone that, you know, you're going to have to butt heads with him on the goal line, and he's probably going to win it just on strength alone. But Matt's got a lot of that in him, too. And I think that he's definitely valuable. I see him above McKinnon in this mix. I really do. I see him as the backup. Banyard. I love Banyard. I don't know why he doesn't get on the field more than he does. He's shown me, look, it's just me, but I see something every time he's out there. And McKinnon, I like McKinnon a lot. I'm not willing to just give him what people are talking about already. I think that he's slick out of the backfield to take a dump route, that little safety valve catch. I think he can do a lot with that. I don't know if he's got running back instincts yet, though. He was a quarterback in college at Georgia Southern.
That's right.
And I like him. He's powerful. He's a great-looking athlete. And I think that if he just plays and keeps going and they keep him on the squad, I think he can develop into a running back. But I see a quarterback with running skills running out there, which is different for me. That's just the way I see it. And I love the way he catches and yards after the catch. I like McKinnon there too. He's nifty. He can make a guy miss, several guys miss. So that's what I think he brings to the table. But Asiata is sort of a package deal. He can pass block. He can run the ball. He doesn't put it on the ground. He catches the ball pretty nifty, too. But I like the guy. I really do. We have another guy coming in right now, very special, a lot of value because he brings food every time he comes in. It's a Tom Schreier from Cold Omaha. Could be a run or a pass next. We just don't know. But we do know it's Taco Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday.
I'm going to go out there and eat my ass off right now. Yeah, you think I won't? Tom Schreier next.